As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Paul Sweeney. Join us each day for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App. We have two really important guests. And, you know, when we put this together, Eric put this together, I'm like, yeah. That was before CPI yesterday. Yep. Ian Lingen joins us now. Absolutely definitive, massive award-winning in the fixed income space. And lighting it up with me in Toronto a number of days ago, Francis Donald joins for Manulife for a half-hour discussion. We'll take a break so Lisa can give you the markets here midway. Let me start, Francis Donald, with you as well. If we have higher inflation, does that mean higher nominal GDP? Or does inflation-adjusted GDP depress so much that we don't get an animal spirit lift?
You know, Tom, once again, I think it's going to take me longer to figure out what that question is than answer it. Maybe what the heart of it is this all a system that is just operating as it should in a new economy that is operating at higher levels? Or are we overheating? Maybe that's how I'm going to interpret that question, because yes, that's what is weighing on me. Are we overheating? And if we're overheating, then the risk of a more painful 2025, 2026 is larger. And that's what keeps me up at night is if we're overheating, and I think this does have elements of overheating and excesses, then it's right, all well and good to say the economy's added 303,000 jobs. There's demand in the system. We're not in deflation. But if we don't get rate cuts now, then my sense is 2025 and 2026 is going to be more painful. And we've said a lot of times, Tom, on this show and on other ones, you can't have your cake and either eat it too. We were in a soft landing narrative, but one of two things was going to happen. Either we were going to be in a situation where the data was too good and rate cuts got pushed out and the market wouldn't like that, or the data was going to deteriorate and we were going to have recession concern. That's exactly what's happening.
And what's so important here, after Francis threw me under the bus there.
Great job.
Question, I'm going to go right over to Ian and ask the same damn question and he'll throw me under the bus as well. Okay, we got all these moving parts. Everybody, all our listeners, our viewers on YouTube, their heads are spinning here, Ian Lingen. And the bottom line is inflation's up. So we've got a set of outcomes that we can have. And one set is we get a more buoyant animal spirit, the overheating that Francis Donald is talking about, or we get a really diminished GDP. What do you see off these two inflation reports about what the animal spirit of America is going to be?
I think at this point, the biggest takeaway...
No, this is where you say, Tom, you don't know what you're talking about. Now continue.
Actually, let me rephrase that. Tom, that was a brilliant question.
There we go.
I think that Francis is right. You're going to have one of those two outcomes. You're either going to see things go a bit weaker as the net takeaway over the course of the next several quarters, or we're going to find ourselves in a situation where we realize that 5.5% is the upper bound for the Fed funds is not as restrictive as the Fed believed it was in 2023. Yeah. What I worry about, however, is that if we continue to get inflation prints at these levels, the Fed is going to find itself backed into a corner where they need to cause a recession if they're going to hold that 2% inflation target.
So it's, Francis, I think from a past discussion, I got the sense that you guys are very more conservative than maybe the consensus on this economy. I took the recession talk off the table a year ago. Was that a little premature?
No, it would have been the right call because, yes, we do believe there is downward surprises for growth ahead, but they're not quite here yet. And this is what the Fed has to contend with. I'm with Ian on this one, is in the near term, inflation, we think, is going to continue to surprise to the upside, and the Fed won't be able to cut. They're going to lose the data support to cut in the near term. However, that increases the probability of a recession. And I remember members of my team back in December said, the Fed has pivoted early. This is going to provide indirect easing. We should lower our probability of recession calls for 2024. But now that we're back in an environment where we're losing those embedded rate cuts, we actually have to increase the chance of something bad happening here. I think the Fed is going to be in a situation with inflation data like this, PPI numbers, claims numbers, where they have to stay higher for longer. And they may have to stay higher until something breaks. That's the problem. Now, meanwhile, we're talking about PPI data, but yesterday we had the Bank of Canada. This morning we have the ECB. They're all saying we have the data to begin cutting. I think in the next couple of months, we might not be talking about recessions, but we'll be talking about how U.S. exceptionalism, which was once a good thing, is going to become more problematic for the Fed versus these other central banks and economies.
Right. Hey, Ian, I got the U.S. 10-year trading about 4.53%. Where's it going to be year-end, do you think?
I think there's a strong case to be made that we end 2024 with 10-year yields in a range of, let's call it, 375 to 395. The big question right now is how far do they back up until we start to get some dip buying interest.
For the traders worldwide that hang on every Ian Lincoln note, Francis Donald's taking notes up there with Manulife right now. You have published a lower 10-year yield call. And you've also said if you get a yield lift, load the boat. After yesterday, after today, you've got to be loving the acquisition of full faith and credit paper here, right?
I do think that we're right up against a range where it makes sense to really load the boat. Between that 465 and 475 level in tens, I expect a fair amount of dip buying interest to come in. The caveat is that the 10-year auction yesterday needed a much bigger concession to be taken down, and I think that that was simply the investors stepping back given how much volatility there was in the market at the moment.
Yeah, that's what it's just amazing. I try not to pay attention to those auctions. I'd rather pay somebody to do it for me. But I did note that they weren't necessarily as strong as maybe people would have liked. Francis, give us your sense here of how, well, let me ask you this. What is the data that you're going to be looking at over the next several days and weeks and kind of get a sense of what the Fed's going to be looking at? What are you going to be looking at?
We're looking at the job market. Because the focus has turned back towards inflation, which is not providing enough cover for cuts in the near term, probably not for June, although I'm already getting messages from my team here that the contributions from PPI that help us understand what PCE will look like are actually looking fairly light. So the Fed's PCE number might not be as severe as yesterday's CPI.
Important.
But we're still worried about that labor market. Rehiring activity is down. Layoffs are up. People are not as confident about their job prospects. And some of these leading indicators inside job reports, even though we look at the headlines like full-time employment down year over year, these are all really problematic. Labor markets don't break in straight lines. They break in nonlinear fashion. So while the market is focused on some of these inflation dynamics, our eyes are going to be on when does labor really start to break? Because when it breaks, it won't matter whether you're a CEO, won't matter whether you were in the inflation higher for longer. The Fed will have to refocus towards the growth side of their mandate.
Francis, you know, I'm out on live chat on YouTube. These guys are talking fishing in Texas and Wyoming. And every once in a while, somebody shows up with an adult observation. Stargate kills it this morning. And Francis, this is I can go to Francis because I got such confidence she can nail this. In the old days, Francis, teenagers got jobs. They were in a restaurant. They were lousy. And they got better. The model's broken from immigration. Now restaurants are hiring really serious, full-time, 40, 50, 60-hour week, full-time people. I mean, the whole labor component of service has changed. It's a different America, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, 40% of Americans don't work, Tom. The employment to population ratio in the U.S. is about 60. And that's because we have the largest share of those over the age of 65 than the U.S. has had in modern economic history. And beyond that, yes, the immigration component is becoming increasingly relevant. And there are plenty of academic economists who are saying the extent of immigration is going to change the amount of jobs we have to create. You can actually just look north of the border to Canada to see just how powerful huge amounts of immigration, it's substantially larger in Canada, can distort your data. In Canada, for example, GDP is looking just fine, but GDP per capita has been declining since September of 2022. So there's a myriad of factors that are going in to change the composition of this labor market. And yet at the end of the day, Tom, if people don't have jobs, they aren't going out to restaurants, they aren't buying things, they aren't spending. And therefore, at the end of the day, no matter how dynamic the labor market is, if unemployment rises, it is bad. And so first principles still apply, even as the economy is shifting.
Ian Ling and John Templeton once told me to my face, there'll be a shortage of bonds. We have a deficit. We have a debt. Do we have a shortage of bonds?
Our stance has always been, if you missed bonds at an auction, you don't have to worry about it because they will always make more, and they're always going to be making more. Now, there might be some scarcity in particular sectors at a given point, but what I think is really interesting is, as we approach the election, there aren't any deficit hawks left in Washington, and everyone is worried about a next level of deficit spending ending up with more treasury bonds hitting the market. We're going to saturate what the bill market can handle, and we're going to need to see larger 10 and 30 year auctions. And I think that will be a big headwind for a constructive outlook on bonds.
Are you, or is the market, concerned about deficits and things like that? I mean, I've been hearing about this my entire life, and I've seen the clock here in Manhattan my entire life about the debt in this country. Does the Treasury market care about it at all?
Well, to some extent, no. I would argue that 10 and 30-year yields are set off of global macro expectations of growth and inflation with some degree of a term premium priced in, depending on where we are in the cycle. I will make the observation that term premium and supply becomes far more important in a no landing or a Goldilocks economic outcome, because that means that the market has the bargaining power to demand higher rates.
Interesting. Francis, you know, one of the issues out there is the consumer here. What's your view of the consumer? I mean, the consumer, by and large, if they want a job, they have a job. Wages are going up, I think, in excess of inflation. How do you view the consumer here?
It depends which consumer, Paul, because we're starting to see a pretty large bifurcation between low-income consumers and high-end consumers. You know, high-end consumers are benefiting from higher rates, great stock markets, house prices. They still have excess savings, and therefore their confidence levels are very high. And yet low-income consumers are out of excess savings. They are seeing their job prospects weaken, and they are hampered by higher interest rates. This is why consumer credit card delinquencies are starting to rise. So there's this huge spread that's happening. It's the same spread that's happening between CEO confidence and small business confidence that have this largest spread that we've seen in the history of these two indicators being compared against each other. So right now we know that the top quintile, so the top 20% of U.S. consumers, spend 35% of all the PCE. And what that means is the high-end consumer can probably carry the economy better than if we were relying on the low-end consumer. And that's why understanding these two separate groups and why the data doesn't say the same thing for each of them is going to be really important in the next 6 months.
Lagarde speaking in Frankfurt. I love this headline. This says all about our Bloomberg coverage. Lagarde repeats wording of ECB statement. Hopefully we'll get to Ian like that. Hopefully we'll get to Q&A here in a moment. Ian Ling, and I've got to go back to this combination CPI-PPI report. Francis is going to brilliantly lay out how it gets to what Powell cares about, PCE, Trim Dallas, Fancy Cleveland, you know, the other inflation indices. Does this CPI-PPI combo change how you write your note? Have you made a fundamental shift in your inflation belief after the last 48 hours?
So I think that the takeaway from the inflation updates has been that we thought January and to some extent February were one-off reports. There was some seasonality, but the reality is inflation looks a lot stickier than we thought it was going to be at this point. And I think the more interesting question is, has the Fed's reaction function to realize inflation changed? Are they going to need to now signal that we have only 50 basis points or even 25 basis points worth of rate cuts when we get the updated dot plot in June? I would say that the short answer is yes, we are looking at fewer rate cuts this year, but the way that the Fed approaches inflation hasn't changed. The biggest risk is if they ever revisit the 2% inflation target, and we just don't see that happening.
Ian, thank you so much. Great experiment. Francis Donald, we'll get the two of you back together again. Maybe we can get you both in the office. Here in Montreal, Francis Donald with Manulife, Ian Lingan with us here this morning as well.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Joining us now, Dennis Gartman on gold in yen. Dennis, you have absolutely nailed this. Gold to the moon, yen down to a 34-year weakness at yesterday. When do you cover this massive moonshot gain that you've got?
Years from now. It's going to be quite some period of time. The Japan is concerned about the fact that the yen has traded to 152, and they're actually speculating or ruminating about the fact that they may intervene to stop the yen from weakening beyond 152. But when I first started trading foreign exchange back in the 1970s, yen was trading 350 yen to the dollar. It traded 250 yen to the dollar. It traded 150 yen to the dollar. So the fact that we're at 152 yen to the dollar and the possibilities of some intervention are, I think, inconsequential. I think if the Bank of Japan were to intervene against the Japanese yen at 152, maybe it goes to 150. But I think I think over the course of the next several years, we trade yen back to 200, maybe 225.
Right.
Gold has gone from the lower left to the upper right in dollar terms. It's gone from the lower left to the very upper right in yen terms. It's gone from the lower left to the very upper right in euro terms, and it's going to continue. So it's inflationary problems around the world, not just here in the United States. I've been bullish on gold in yen, euro, and dollar terms and continue to be so.
I can't say enough, folks, about what you just heard there is classic Gartman, which is if you're not a student of history, you don't get to win. And sometimes you lose money. Gartman lost money in 2000. I think it was 21. He lost some money there as well. But the study of history, every chart on yen ends 3 years ago. Gartman has the courage to go back 30 years to look at the different trends and vectors. Paul, jump in on gold.
Dennis, who is buying gold these days?
Central banks have been the major buyers. The Bank of Japan, the Bank of China has been a very large buyer of gold. The Bank of Russia has been a very large buyer of gold. Central banks have been buyers of gold, and they are the sponsors of the gold rally thus far. I think gold continues to go higher because of the fear that the United States may trap Russian assets here in the United States to pay for Ukraine. That's been a discussion several times. And if that were to occur, gold would go up another $50 to $100 that day when that announcement comes out. So I think gold wants to go a lot higher. Central bankers have been the buyers. I'm a little concerned that we're actually seeing the public in rather aggressively. So for my own account, I actually sold a few out of the money calls against my gold miners on Monday and Tuesday. But I think gold wants to go demonstrably higher, and those calls expire tomorrow, and I'm slightly out of the money on them, so that's turned out to be a good idea.
So have the miners traded similar to the underlying bullion?
Miners have lagged well behind bullion for the course of the past 5 years, to be quite honest. Okay. And now they're beginning to pick up and catch up. I think that if you're going to be involved in gold, GLD is where I've been with the bank, with the endowment fund at the University of Akron. But I think for the public, if you're going to be a buyer of gold, be a buyer of the gold miners. I think they're starting to catch up to the movement that we've seen in bullion over the course of the past several years. They have become very cheap, and they want to go, I think, demonstrably higher.
Your extraordinary trade. Folks, I'm talking about lifetime trade of gold, but priced in Japanese yen. Let's move on, Dennis, to the CPI report of yesterday. Is this a pandemic CPI, or is it a CPI from yours and my youth?
I think this is a CPI from yours and my youth. I think we're starting to see inflationary pressures incumbent everywhere. Grain prices have stopped going down and have started to go up. Meat prices have been going up for a while. Clearly, crude oil and heating oil prices have been going from the lower left to the upper right, and I think are going to continue to do so. Copper prices, tin prices, aluminum prices have been going up. This is, I think, a problematic circumstance, not something that's going to go away anytime soon. And that's been one of the driving forces behind the purchase of gold and gold's bull move. So I'm a little concerned, again, that the public has gotten enamored of gold in the course of the past week or two. But the fact that we've taken gold down $15 or $20 from its high probably took a few of the weak hands that had come into the market in the past couple of days. I think if you want to be a buyer, you've probably got another $15 to $20 on the downside in gold, but then I'd be a buyer there, no question. And again, I think the real trade is to own gold in dollar terms, yen terms, and euro terms. If this is something that's just beyond a dollar circumstance, beyond a U.S. circumstance, this is a global circumstance that's prevailing right now.
Dennis, given that inflation print we saw yesterday, what do you expect this Federal Reserve to do?
When 2 months ago, I in my biweekly newsletter, I said that it was comical that people were expecting 5 to 6 cuts in the overnight Fed funds rate. I thought there'd be 2 to 3 at most. Yeah. Now I think it's going to be 1 at most. And if we probably get 1, it'll either be in June at the June meeting or at the November meeting, probably at the November meeting, simply because it takes place after the election. And it would eliminate the concern that the Fed is political in nature. So I think there's only 1 to come this year. And in all likelihood, it'll be in the November meeting for the FOMC.
Dennis, I want to go to the back end of the Gartman letter of years past. Mr. Gartman is somewhat retired when he's not out trying to qualify for the Masters. And, you know, Dennis, I got two questions left. And let me begin first here with the politics of the Gartman letter. I think it's no surprise to our audience worldwide. Possibly Dennis Gartman leans to the right. Is there a separation between Republicans and the Trump supporters, or are they one now?
No question. No question. I am not a Trump supporter. I will vote for Mr. Trump, but I'll do it with my nose held tight as I do so. This is Mr. Trump believes in tariffs and protected trade. Republicans believe in free trade and non-tariffs. Mr. Trump believes in putting his fingers into the pie too much with regulation.
Right.
Good Republicans are opposed to that sort of thing. So, yes, I think there is a dichotomy, a bridge, a chasm being built between old-style Republicans such as I, libertarians such as I, and Mr. Trump.
You are more qualified, Dennis Gartman, than anyone I know to answer this question. You serve the University of Akron on how they run their money, and he was not one but two NC State Final Four.
Yeah.
Dennis, do you observe that the mania over athletics in America, like in an amazing NC State, ends up helping the NC State English department? Can you make the attachment from big time sports over to Caldwell Hall and the Melissa Crow poetry reading and contest at NC State?
You've done your homework. That's very impressive. Thank you for that. I'm the chairman of the University of Akron's endowment, but I was on the board of directors of NC State's endowment for 15 years, and my heart is still with NC State. It was a great run. Amazing fact that both the men and the women made it to the Final Four, and I think over time that's going to be beneficial to all of our programs at NC State. There'll probably be an increase in the money coming into the endowment, and there'll probably be an increase in the number of people applying to the university. So it was a great run. God bless the NC State, and here's to the fact that we may vanquish our foes at the University of North Carolina and Duke in the coming years.
Hugely impressive there. Did you hear that?
I heard that.
I believe I heard that. That was to the West. Dennis Gartman, go away. Dennis Gartman, they're on gold in yen, the trade of the last 10 years. There's no other way to put it. ECB, domestic price pressures are strong. I love this, Paul. Help me out.
Yep.
ECB to follow data-dependent approach to determining rate path. Can we all go home?
Exactly. Data-dependent. So again, kind of right in line, Tom, the ECB leaves the deposit facility rate at 4%, right in line with expectations. Now everybody's kind of saying, all right, let's get to June now. And
maybe,
what are they going to do in June?
Maybe if the Fed did this, with a Fed to size, and yes, we've got a couple programs coming up here, Kieran Buchanan driving that forward, but you know, the Fed decides if we had 400 headlines come out like we get here at 8:15 Wall Street time, maybe it'd be easier. It'd be clear. Traders hold ECB rate bets steady. That from Bloomberg, very important. Pricing 19 basis points of cuts by the time Marcus Ashworth has his first gray hair. Joining us right now from London, Marcus Ashworth. Marcus, this is one of the most valued traditions every 30 days or 6 weeks, whatever it is, to have you on. How slow is Europe? How different is Europe right now, the continent, ex-Switzerland? How different is it as compared to America?
It's almost diametrically opposite at the moment. And that's why I'm disappointed that the ECB has chosen to wait for yet more data-dependent information, which is going to tell it exactly what it already knows. You know, we're going to get a cut in June. That's a long 8 weeks away. We had the ECB's own bank lending survey out this week, which was just diabolical. I mean, it shows you that demand for loans is dropping even further than they thought. They thought it was going to see a rise. It actually fell. It fell quite substantially. There's real problems in Germany, particularly the demand for borrowing, let alone allowing borrowing. It's the worst type of a problem you can have when people don't even want to borrow. So in that sense, I think with German manufacturing heading back down again on the PMIs and a range of appalling fiscal numbers out of both Italy and France, which shows you that the government is not going to be there to help in the way that it clearly has been throughout the pandemic and onwards, that we don't have that big stimulus boom that you see in the States, which is continuing to make everything else look, frankly, dead in the water. And that's where Europe is.
Paul, John Farrell. First time I saw Farrell was at the ECB.
Was that
He's
right?
on the lawn in Frankfurt. Man, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
It's the first time I saw him. Farrell demands a red sticky. So we've got a red sticky, a headline, a famous Bloomberg red sticky. ECB, rates may fall if we're confident, Paul, inflation heading to 2%. Good luck with that.
Exactly. So, Marcus, I mean, give us a sense of how the economies are across the European Union here. Because, I mean, I think, again, as you mentioned, the stimulus here in the U.S. is, boy, it's done its job. But give us a sense of how in need do you think of the European economy is for rate cuts?
What level of desperation do you need? I mean, do we have to get down on our knees and beg these people? But, I mean, literally, 4% rates may not sound high compared to what they are in the U.K. and the U.S. But practically speaking, when they've come from negative 50, and 8 years of sort of zero and below rates in Europe. You know, this is a very high rates, relatively speaking. And, you know, really, there's no signs of life. I mean, the economies are either flatlining at best or they're sinking in a recession like Germany. And there's no prospect of any growth. That's the thing that's depressing. There's nothing good on the horizon coming.
Marcus, some guests have said there's still an austere trend there, an austerity that's part of the culture. Are they following a theory that's in a textbook, like in London at LSE, Paul, beg, B-E-G-G, the beg is the one volume, it's like the Mankiw, or the, you know, the one volume Econ 101 textbook. Are they following a textbook, Marcus Ashworth, or are they making it up just like the Fed, except with a cultural template of austerity?
They're busking it. They are making it up in the sense that they are desperately trying to stick to this shibboleth of, oh my word, inflation is too high and it's awful, and we must wait till absolutely every single inflation number is now at 2% or below. They're not far off that. Inflation's at 2.4 in Europe, 2.9 on the core, but it's going to be down to 2 very quickly. The ECB forecasts it to be at 2.2 in August. I think it'll be there next month. And down below 2%, right, it will go, and it will stay below 2%. That's my fear, is actually not just disinflation, but potentially deflation. If you get a proper recession, which is right on the verge of in Europe, then I think you'll get
right.
The ECB will lose control again.
The euro moving rather, 107.13. We're about ready to get a 106 handle on euro. That would be germane the press conference.
Parity.
Exactly. Marcus, talk to us about the UK. How's the economy over there, and what do you expect from the Bank of England?
Do I have to?
Tom and I will come over there and stimulate that economy,
yeah,
if that's what you need.
Stop. Marcus, this is important. I get up, folks, at like 1:30 and read 9 newspapers, and I finish with the British newspapers because they're the freshest. It's 6 a.m. Even Ashworth is up reading them. And, you know, you read the FT and that. Marcus, I read the Telegraph. I want to slit my wrists. Is it that bad over in the UK?
No, it's not at all. And the newspapers are making far more out of it than there is. It's fine here. In fact, if anything, there's a bit more growth in UK than there is in most of the rest of Europe. Things are fine. They're not brilliant. I think we'll have inflation much lower than 2% by the summer, probably down at 1.5 and lower. So the question is, will the Bank of England ever wake up and cut interest rates? Well, we might get one in June if we're lucky, but a bit like the ECB today, they're still in denial.
I see the old fire alarm is going off at Queen Victoria Street in London.
The flames are behind
it. I got that memo.
The fire alarm is there because Francine Lacroix is having a tantrum that they're out of Ely Espresso. That's where the fire alarm's going off.
Marcus, talk to us about Germany, because that's, you know, as goes Germany, as goes a lot of the EU, is kind of how a lot of us over here in the States figure it. Their dependence on China, that type of thing. What's the latest on the German economy?
Well, I mean, they are in a very bad situation whereby their basic model of cheap Russian hydrocarbons is gone probably forever. And their main export markets to China and Russia as well are nowhere near as strong or non-existent now. So, you know, we've got a real situation with electric vehicles where Das Auto has got a major competitive problem now, ironically, with China. They've sold them all the kit over the years to make the machines, and now they're trying to, those machines are being sold back to them. So it's really not great.
Right.
Look, Germany at one point has got a great fiscal balance. It's got a lot of resources. It'll be fine, but for the short term, it's pretty bleak.
Right. And Marcus, just to help you here, when there's a fire alarm at Queen Victoria Street, I know that you all gather at the Ned.
Yep.
And Saccone's is the bar to gather at when you exit the building. Marcus Ashworth with a little fire alarm theater in London with good perspective on the ECB.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Now, a look at the front pages. What's making news around the world? Your daily roundup of today's headlines from major publications.
Bloomberg Surveillance with futures and negative 25 PPI here in 40 minutes. We're always brought to you the newspapers, the Lisa Mateo Hour, brought to you by IBKR Financial Advisors. Switch to Interactive Brokers for lowest cost, global trading and turnkey custody solutions. No ticket charges, no conflicts of your interests. Do that at IBKR.com/RIA. I looked at the newspapers. They were nuts today.
Crazy.
To quote the Angry Beavers. Lisa, tell us about the newspapers.
This is something we talk about all the time as we start to see people roll into the office. New York City's return to office rate nears 80%. That's what they're saying, and that's thanks to banks, actually.
Okay.
It's a good write-up in Bloomberg. It points to Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, one of the two of the big ones. A rebound also in Miami, two people going back to the office. So the study says return to office rates last year for both cities were the highest among 7 major markets, above the national average of about 63%. So more people coming into the office.
Not buying it.
No, you're not buying it. You're not, look,
although
look,
I,
look at the
the senior BI management is in New York today, so that's a rare sighting. So good for them.
You know what I find interesting? I know, because of time, I can't go on all day about this. I'm watching every single tweet. In Elon Musk's X, there's a feed of all the busted suburban Class B properties.
Yep.
And to me, that folds right over into what's happening in Manhattan or Chicago, or a great article I'll give the Journal credit on St. Louis the other day. There's something going on out here, Paul, way bigger than what we've got here.
Yeah, I think the commercial real estate issue is going to be a multi-year issue that we're going to be dealing with. What else you got?
New York City airports. You've been there lately. They look a little better,
yes.
Right? Yes, they look much better. 2016, you remember JFK, Newark, LaGuardia. They were among the 10 worst.
Yep.
So now things are getting better. You have LaGuardia's new Terminal B, Newark's new Terminal A. In March, LaGuardia actually earned the title for best airport in North America.
Wow.
But you have JFK, too. They're undergoing a $19 billion worth of construction on the terminals, expanding ones, upgrading the roadways. By 2026, more than $30 billion investment is going to go into making them all state-of-the-art airports.
What I noticed in that article, which goes to the magic of very high-feed Heathrow or Zurich, is the maintain. Mm. And they're putting incentives in, I think, now so that these palaces that we've built won't be ruined in 2030 or 2035. Right. To me, the maintenance of these gorgeosities is really, to me, important. And the lines have been pretty good recently, even at Newark.
I'm heading over to Terminal A at Newark in a few hours.
I'm afraid to ask, where are we going?
We're going down to Durham, North Carolina, to see our friends at Duke. But the Terminal A has been, it is amazing. It's really nice. It's European nice.
Now, you're going to talk, is Calipari had you to come down to see about Arkansas?
No, not yet, but I'll check in with Coach Shire down at Duke.
Okay, you do that. Lisa, what else do you have?
We talked about the Masters before, kicking off Augusta National today, right? A little bit delayed because of the weather. But the Wall Street Journal has this good look into the golf industry itself. You know, the golf is a great thing, but is it a good business? That's the question. So there's been a number of rounds played, growing nationwide, uptick in new golf course development. Private clubs have waiting lists for memberships. Some are saying, though, that popularity is going to start to fall. But the way people experience golf, that's also changing too, which is helping the sport. You have the Top Golf era, right? People going to Top Golf, driving ranges. Yep. You have the mix of entertainment, drinks, friends, you know, everybody having a good time. Golf club memberships offering more. They're converting these boardrooms into family dining rooms. They're offering daycare, junior golf instruction. So they're offering more.
Have you done Top Golf?
I've done it. Yes, it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it, and they want it to be one big party, alcohol-led. Okay, great. Can they teach me to play golf like you
play
golf?
They can
like
teach
Damien Sassauer plays
I don't know
golf?
About Damien Sassauer, but, I mean, the wait list at our club is 18 months. It's the biggest it's
really?
Been in about 20 years. So, and you think about the pandemic, when everybody was locked down, the golf course was packed.
I just want everybody to understand.
It's the one place you can go.
And
Sarah knows this in the control room. Sarah, the closest I get to a wait list at a club is Famiglia at Madison and 97th Street. You have a wait list at your club?
Yes, 18 months.
How much, pray tell, is the upfront money once you just wander off the wait list?
I don't know what the number is. I'm going to say 50.
Wow.
Maybe.
50. $50?
Yes. Put a couple of...
50?
Comma.
Yeah.
I would think. Yeah, something along those lines.
Lisa, we're not breathing the same oxygen here.
Oh, gosh.
What else do you have?
Well, since we're talking about the price of golf. Okay, so all the billionaires moving to Miami, the price of golf memberships there have skyrocketed.
Yeah,
okay, you have top clubs around Miami doubled or tripled their membership fees since 2020. Here's the figure. High 6- and 7-figure joining fees. That's what they're charging.
Yeah.
Nearly impossible to get in. Like you said, they do have the wait list too, but then there's more that are coming in, so they're starting to grow.
There's a million and one golf courses down there. You fly into like Miami or Fort Lauderdale. Everywhere you look, there's
still
a golf
waiting list.
Crazy.
But they're building new ones. There's a New York-based developer, Witkoff. They're planning one in Palm Beach area, and that's going to cost $350,000
I caddied for years at Country Club of Rochester and at Oak Hill. I'm honored to caddy there in 68, not for the Open, the Lee Trevino Open. But I can't imagine how busy the courses are now. Paul, I can't imagine the pressure on a Saturday to keep it moving, and there's some guy in the green lining up a 10-foot putt and taking an hour.
Friday, now that nobody works on Fridays, everybody hybrid works on Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
packed on Friday.
That's true.
It's kind of like the old days when we have like the cars all lined up. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so it's, I don't know.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much. Yeah. This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast, bringing you the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.